Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shirtliff. This show is heard on WBCQ, the planet, every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time and every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is also heard on IPMNation.org, and that's IPM, all lowercase, nation, uppercase with an N, and every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also listen to the show on our YouTube channel, Camp Constitution, and on Podomatic. Just go to podomatic.com and put in Camp Constitution Radio, and you can hear our shows. We archive them. There's another place we archive them, but we only got a couple of hours worth of show. So, well, welcome again to the show. This show is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp, and our 2018 camp is going to be held from August 5th to the 11th in the beautiful Berkshires of Western Massachusetts. And we've got a really great lineup. Well, we have a great lineup every year, but I think we might be topping it for our 10th annual camp. That would include instructors like Lord Christopher Monckton, Mr. John McManus. Then we have Mrs. Chrisanne Hall, Professor Willie Soon, and Dr. Duke Pesta, among others. And we're really excited about our program. And even though it's still February, we've been scheduling classes and making arrangements. And so it's kind of a year-round planning to make this, to pull a great camp like this up. We're also looking into expanding our camp. And that's why the listeners, your support is so important. If you could help us out, not just to keep shows like this show on the air, but also to help expand our program. I don't mean our radio program necessarily, but I mean our overall program. We'd like to start a few other camps, and you can visit us on our website. We have a PayPal account. You can make a donation, become a camp sponsor, participate, host an event. We have a speakers bureau, so consider hosting one of our speakers, and just visit our website and for that information, campconstitution.net. Well, folks, last week was a pretty busy news week here in the good old USA. The FBI, the infamous FBI memo, was finally revealed or released, and I'm not going to get into a lot of the comments on the issues on the FBI. I think there are some great commentators out there that have dissected this, and will continue to do so. We hope that it will lead to some prosecutions of the deep staters, especially in the FBI. What's interesting about the FBI, it was one time considered a sort of a pro-American patriotic entity that you can pretty much rely on the agents. They had great character. And I'm sure there are still some very good agents in the FBI, but it has become a real rotten entity. And I know J. Edgar Hoover had his issues, but I couldn't imagine him participating in a memo where they made up a story that Trump hired Russian prostitutes to urinate on a bed that Obama slept in. And that's the mindset of these disgusting people. That's what we're dealing with. But the FBI has become under criticism. I remember in the 90s during the Clinton administration, Louis Freeh was the director at that time. And Louis Freeh goes over to the Soviet Union, or what used to be called the Soviet Union, and meets with his KGB counterpart. Of course, they renamed it FSB or whatever they call it. And he said, together we are invincible. And I could imagine J. Edgar Hoover doing that. And then, of course, the what happened at Ruby Ridge, I know there was some FBI involvement in that, FBI sharpshooter. And the FBI sharpshooters, they are some of the best sharpshooters in the world. And that Lon Horoci, I think his name is, saw that it was a woman holding a baby. And she shot her. He shot her right between the eyes, shot her dead. That's really... We've come a long way since the day of J. Edgar Hoover, let's say. And again, Hoover had his issues, and I'm not necessarily thinking he was the greatest director there, but we've got some serious problems when people in the FBI want to take down the president and with the colluding with the Democrat Party. So I'm hoping that there'll be some arrest coming out of this, and the problem is the FBI should not be a partisan entity, and it's become a partisan entity. And that's really the issue here. The FBI is not the plaything of the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. It has a specific job. It used to be just to gather information, Federal Bureau of Investigation. They didn't even have the power of arrest. and now they're a big force upon themselves. They're training local police departments and militarizing our military. I mean, I'm sorry, our police department. So that really has to be reined in, and let's hope that will happen, as well as the CIA and these other intel gathering entities that are costing the taxpayers billions of dollars, and also where we're losing our freedom. So again, there's lots of great commentary out there. I did want to talk, this month, February, has been designated Black History Month. And I am not a fan of Black history or white history or brown history or female history or this group's history or that group's history. I think history should be colorblind. However, I will acknowledge that there are a lot of contributions made by Black Americans that have been not as well known. And that doesn't necessarily mean it was racism because of racism. For example, you read your World War II history. You're not going to read a whole lot about the average foot soldier, the sergeants, lieutenants, the captains, unless there's, like Audie Murphy. There's some examples where somebody, one of the wars, distinguished themselves, as sergeants and privates. But for the most part, you're going to read about the admirals and generals and the politicians that were involved in the war somehow. Churchill and Roosevelt and Stalin and Hitler and the generals, Rommel and Patton, Patton's one of my favorites, and so forth. But there's lots of contributions made by people who aren't at that level, and it's not as well known. Of course, there was the first Black general, General Davis. He came out of World War II. And we at Camp Constitution do enjoy teaching people about the great contributions made by many Black Americans. We primarily focus on the Revolutionary War, but not entirely. In fact, usually on the way to camp, over the last 9 years, I live in the city of Boston, we go through the town of Ashby, Massachusetts, which is on the New Hampshire border in central Massachusetts. And we visit the gravesite of Prince Esterbrook. Now, Prince Esterbrook was from Lexington, Massachusetts. He was a slave. He was also a member of the Lexington Militia. He answered the alarm on April 18th, the night of April 18th, and he was one of the men wounded at the Battle of Lexington on Lexington Green. And every year, the Lexington Minutemen, which is not a real entity, it's a ceremonial entity, I should say, they're not an action militia unit, certified under the U.S., under the control of the governor of Massachusetts. But they do an incredible reenactment. And there's a gentleman now, he's now in his early 80s, and he's been doing this for 30 plus years. I believe Prince was probably in his early 20s, maybe late 20s, when he was wounded. But Prince was a slave. He did get his freedom. He spent, I believe, 5 years after he was a Lexington militia member. He ended up enlisting in the army. He served in New York, upstate New York, very gallantly and bravely. And so a lot of people just don't know his story. And I think it's important. And that's why we like to talk about people like Prince Esterbrook. And there's a book about him. Also in the town of Jaffrey. Now, our camp used to be in the town of Ridge, New Hampshire, just a short distance. Jaffrey actually borders New Hampshire. And there's an incredible story of a man that bought his freedom. He was a slave in the North Shore of Boston, and he bought his freedom. His name is Amos Fortune, and he was an older man. He was in his 60s when he bought his freedom, and he bought the freedom of a woman whom he married, and she died after a short time after they got married, and he ended up buying another woman, and they moved to Jaffrey. Now, he was a tanner, very talented man, and he was ordered out, and what that means, it doesn't mean that he couldn't go into the town and live in the town. It meant that the town's charity would not support him if necessary. But in a very short time, he became a pillar of the community. He became very much beloved. He was a member of the local church. He lived a long life. And if you visit that little town, you'll see his humble little home and quite a testimony to his character. There's historical plaques there in the library on the second floor. There's a beautiful display of some of his artifacts and his life. And when he died, he gave his estate to the church and also to set up a fund in town, which still exists. And I think this is important because the narrative, Black History Month, has been co-opted by the left. because they control the culture, they control the universities, they control most of the media. And so they highlight mostly leftist people who did not like the United States. There's some exceptions, but most of the historical black figures that they promote would be socialists or Marxists or what have you, and not people like Princess Brooke, which you're not going to hear about on Black History Month, most likely, and you hear from people like me, or Amos Fortune. You're not going to hear about Salem Poor or Peter Salem, who were fought at Bunker Hill during the Battle of Bunker Hill. Now, there's one particular person that I would like to highlight. And oh, by the way, let me give a little history. Black History Month started out as Black History Week. I think there was a university in New York. I can't remember what town it was exactly. That they designated the week of February 14th and 12th and 14th, that whatever week that fell on, as Black History Week. This would be back in the 60s and 70s, because Abraham Lincoln was born on the 12th and Frederick Douglass was born on the 14th. But it became Black History Month. Gerald Ford, 1976, designated the month of February as Black History Month. So I remember one time I was having a debate with a white liberal, and he was talking about black history and the accomplishments of blacks and what have you. And this very condescending white liberal who lived in the suburbs. And at the time I was living in a neighborhood that was predominantly black. And he's telling me that that I really need to get a travel around the country and experience things, and you know, I'll have a better perspective. I would have a liberal perspective. And I said, I have traveled somewhat. I've been to the Deep South. I've roomed with blacks. I said, the only time you ever see blacks is when you watch football on Sundays. And some of my black coworkers, whom I was very friendly, thought that was pretty funny. And anyway, a lot of these white liberals have a very condescending attitude towards, but he was typical of the white liberals that had that attitude. So anyway, so I think that's part of our job, is to highlight the accomplishments of black Americans who were patriots and promoted liberty. And even though they came, you know, had a lot of obstacles and faced discrimination and racism, but not always. That wasn't always the case, though. Now, there's one black American that you will not hear highlighted by the left. She is the late Dr. Mildred Jefferson. If you visit my Facebook page, you will see a younger version of yours truly with this beautiful lady. She was born in segregated Texas, became the first black woman to graduate from Harvard Medical School. In fact, Dr. Jefferson didn't like the term black. She preferred the term Negro, and it was kind of, you know, a little awkward to introduce her at a podium as a Negro. And she said that, I do not want Jesse Jackson to tell people what, you know, I'm called. She says, I'm very proud of being a Negro. And the term black used to be a derisive term for black people back when she was. So she passed away in 2010, in October of 2010. She, I think the last, it's most likely the last presentation, it's a public meeting, or last time she came to a speaking event, was at Camp Constitution. And that short presentation, about 7 or 8 minutes long, is on our YouTube channel. Dr. Jefferson was a pioneer in the Right to Life movement. And she could have, you know, she told me that after she graduated and she started working in the Boston area, and she said, every time I sneezed, the Boston Globe would write a story about her. And then they found out that she was a conservative, that she was a Christian, that she was pro-life. They wanted nothing to do with her. Not only that, but the Republican Party of Massachusetts didn't want much to do with her either, because the Republican Party of Massachusetts has been for many years run by what we used to call the limousine liberals. Now they're the rhinos, Republican in name only. And they wanted nothing to do with this outspoken, brilliant woman. She could debate anybody. And my late friend Samuel Blumenfeld knew her, and they were close friends. And he told me that she was the most brilliant person he has ever met. Now, that's saying a whole lot, since Sam knew a lot of brilliant people in his lifetime. So she's somebody that needs to be acknowledged and honored. And again, you can go to our YouTube channel and just put in Dr. Mildred Jefferson. Last year, her hometown in Texas, an artist did a bust of her, and it's on at the public school there. I was invited to attend Pittsburgh, Texas, I believe is the name of the town, but I was unavailable. I wasn't able to go. But I'm very glad that her legacy lives on, and that more people should know She told me that she had a meeting with the candidate Ronald Reagan and convinced him of the pro-life position. And I guess between Phyllis Schlafly and Dr. Jefferson, the two of them helped Ronald Reagan change his position, because Reagan was very much in favor of abortion. Not only that, he signed into law one of, if not the first, law to a bill to decriminalize abortion, making it legal in California. A lot of people don't know that, but in the, and I believe his pro-life position, if it was sincere, I hope it was, no doubt got him a number of votes, especially from Catholic, Democrat Catholics. So that was a very interesting thing there. There's somebody else. There's a father and daughter team that I like to bring out too. George and Philippa Schuyler. Now, George Schuyler, he was born in Providence, Rhode Island in 1895, was a socialist, joined the army. He actually became a lieutenant, and he deserted. He didn't desert in combat. He deserted because of the racism he uncovered, discrimination. He served a little time in the brig, about 9 months in prison, and he was a journalist for the Pittsburgh Courier. But along the way, he became an outspoken conservative, so he changed his socialist position to an advocate of free market liberty, ended up writing for the American Opinion magazine, and a brilliant, brilliant man. H.L. Mencken said he was called the Black H.L. Mencken. Now, I've got some issues with H.L. Mencken, but he did write some brilliant things. His atheism was a problem with me, but he did have he was a very interesting writer, and probably his essays are worth reading. But George Schuyler, not as well known, and he passed away in 1977. Now, I found he debated Malcolm X. He and James Baldwin and a man named Eric Lincoln, Professor Eric C. Lincoln, or C. Eric Lincoln, who was an author, he was a conservative Black writer. And I was, George Schuyler had wrote an article in American Opinion about the Malcolm X and the Black Muslims. And he said that he debated Malcolm X and schooled him. Now, Malcolm X was of the notion that it was the whites, white Christians and Europeans, that the first ones to enslave Blacks, sub-Saharan African Blacks. And he pointed out that it was the Muslims that introduced slavery in sub-Saharan Africa. And he made reference to a Black, I don't mean a Black Muslim as in a U.S. Black Muslim, that's a Muslim of the Black race living in Madagascar. He can't remember his name. And he said that there's even a statue of him in Madagascar. He said he was a notorious Black slave owner and dealer. He bought and sold slaves, almost every one of them Black. And Malcolm X didn't know this. He knew nothing about it. So Schuyler, he wrote a book called Black and Conservative, and then another one called Black No More. I did get a chance to read Black and Conservative, and it's a great book, and it's available on Amazon for not, I'd say, short money, $5-6. It may even been reprinted since he published it. His daughter, Philippa Schuyler. Now, Philippa was the daughter. She was of mixed race. George's wife was a woman from Texas. Actually, she was a granddaughter of slave owners. It was kind of interesting. But Philippa was a child prodigy. She was a concert pianist, and she traveled around the world. And she was also a journalist. She wrote a couple of books. One of them is called Who Killed the Congo? And another book called Good Men Die, about Vietnam. And she was on a journalistic mission, and she was helping an Vietnamese orphan. She was helping some people, some young children, and the helicopter she was in crashed, and she died. You can go to YouTube and find some of her brilliant performances. And again, this is another person she was very well known in her time in the 40s and 50s, but today, very few people know her. Although I did visit the visitor center in Boston, the Black Freedom Trail, and I brought her name up, and the woman behind the counter just had a big old smile, and she says, "Oh, I used to listen to her all the time." So it's important to sort of rediscover some of these people. You take a trip on the Black Freedom Trail in Boston, and it's a fascinating place, the Meeting House. It's just now it's interesting. The meeting house is still owned by the original church, which relocated to Roxbury section of Boston, and a trust, and also the federal government, the Parks Department. But when you hear the term meeting house, it was used as a church. Churches were meeting houses because not only did they have services and church services and other things, but and usually schools, but also public meetings, town business was conducted, city business was conducted at these meeting houses. And that's still done today. You might even, when you vote, you might go to a church and vote in your church. So the idea of separation of church and state is something enshrined in the First Amendment is, if that's the case, then why do people go to church? Why did public officials use churches? And usually said a prayer before and after the meeting. So, but on the Freedom Trail, on this Black History, you learn about a man named Colonel Middleton. His house is still there. It's privately owned, and there's no, I don't even think there's a little plaque that commemorates that, or honors his house or his memory. But he was the leader of George Middleton. He was the leader of a black militia unit during the Revolutionary War. And there's not very much known about it. It's really sad that you think that the records would exist. And boy, it would be something if they were ever found. And the fact that he was referred to as a colonel, that would have made him probably the first black military officer in the United States. And he lived a very long and productive life. And John Hancock and his son presented them with a flag. The Bucks of America was the name of the unit, even though it was mostly people from Boston. And they had they did their duty. They thought that they were probably more of a guarding the city of Boston, and they also guarding some of the British prisoners. That may have been their primary function. But here again is an example of incredible contributions made by black Americans, even though they didn't all enjoy full rights. But they still believed in the country. They still believed in the future. And they knew they had something good here. And yeah, it took a long time before they could have full voting rights and become full citizens and have you. In fact, Massachusetts was one of the first states, I think it was the first state, to abolish slavery. We didn't have a large slave population, although that doesn't mitigate it any. But it was thanks to the Massachusetts Constitution. They have to say, look, it says here free and equal, and bingo, okay, you're free. And thankfully, that Massachusetts was the first state to abolish slavery, and other states followed suit. Sadly, it took the results of a civil war before the rest of the nation, before slavery was abolished. But nevertheless, I know there's these incredible contributions made by black Americans, and we... 2 years ago at Camp Constitution, we did a couple of classes. I did one entitled Black Americans of the Revolutionary War. It was based on a book written by, the name will come to me. It's called The Colored Patriots of the Revolutionary War. It was published in the 1840s. It was a black man who wrote the book. His name just slips from my mind at the time. Incredible book. And he highlights black Americans in New England, Pennsylvania, even in the South, that made incredible contributions in the War for Independence. A lot of people have seen the famous crossing of the Delaware with George Washington standing up in the boat on the ice. The ice is blocks of ice are flowing. Well, there was a little artistic license there, but in that boat you'll see a black man, and he was a slave. His name was Whipple. I think it was Prince Whipple. And although it's not likely that he was actually in that boat at that time, he did serve with George Washington and made many sacrifices. And that's just one of the men that I highlight in the presentation I gave. And then my good friend, Reverend Stevie Kraft, gave a little story of the first, one of the first men to die in the before the Revolutionary War, one of the victims of the Boston Massacre, Crispus Attucks. It was interesting, too, back when I was working in the post office, one of my black co-worker friends, good guy, he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and he said something like, well, history's written by white people, and so forth and so on. I said, okay. I said, name the black man that was killed at the Boston Massacre. And he said, Crispus Attucks. You know, everybody knows that. Everybody kid, at least if you lived around here in the 70s and 80s and went to a school, you probably have learned that Crispus Attucks. And I said, now name the white people who died there. And he didn't. So I said, see? He said, okay, you got me. But anyway, he did a great class on Christmas addicts. And 1 year we took a field trip to Boston and a state house and a little side trip to the old Granary Burial Ground where the victims of the Boston Massacre are buried. And Christmas addicts was one of them. So I think it's important for us, for patriots, to reach out to the black community. The freedom message is not getting to enough black people. When you look at 90 to 95% of black Americans vote for socialism, they vote for Democrats. And it's almost as if the white liberal Democrat has taken the vote for granted, that the black will vote for us no matter what we do. And it's interesting, you'll find so many black Christians, so many with conservative values, they'll preach righteousness in the podium on Sunday, and then on Tuesday and voting day, they'll vote for the most odious leftist, somehow thinking that the Democrat Party is the party that's of the black. And by the way, the Republicans, I'm not suggesting the Republican Party is morally has a moral high ground. Not that to say there aren't some good Republicans. Republican Party has its, I mean, it was, you know, people like Nixon who was pro-abortion, and Nixon gave us the EPA and OSHA and so forth. So, but you'll find more people who share conservative Christian values in the Republican Party. And again, unfortunately, too many blacks to just vote Democrat. And the same thing with Hispanics. Probably more Hispanics, not as many with the Hispanics, but, and that's, of course, why the Democrats just want to have open borders, is they wanted so many of these Hispanics to come in thinking, justifiably so, that they will take their vote for granted and they'll have a permanent majority and usher in this new world order that they're itching to do. Well, I think we're kind of running out of time here. We got just a few minutes left. So with a few minutes left, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the things we do at Camp Constitution. In addition to the camp, the Sam Blumenfeld Archive, if you go to our website, you will see a little drop down there, Sam Blumenfeld, little button. This archive contains much of the works of the late, great Sam Blumenfeld, a pioneer in the homeschool movement. We really encourage you to look into that. It's a free service. All we do is require an email, and we may send you an occasional email about some of the things we do, activities and what have you. In this archive, you have Sam's newsletters, some of his previously unpublished works, some of his books that you can download, and especially his Alpha Phonics. And last year, we had 75,000 people download his Alpha Phonics, and that means that a lot of people all over the world, but mostly in the United States, are able to teach their children how to read the way reading should be with phonetics. And it's a very simple workbook, and you don't need to spend thousands of dollars on reading programs. All you need is this, and it's free, all 128 lessons. And if you're an older person and you've diagnosed as dyslexic, this is the way to overcome it. We also have a speakers bureau, and you'll see some of the speakers we have. Just hit that. And with the speakers bureau, what we do is we're sort of like a finder. We're not really charging any basic honorarium. That hey, I'd like to have Catherine White speak on the Constitution. I'd like to have Al Sherlock Kammerer speak about this subject or that subject. We'll just talk to you, negotiate, cover our travel expenses, honorariums, pass the hat, or whatever. We just want to get out there and get the word out. So I want to thank you folks for listening to our show. Again, as I mentioned when the show started, we are heard on IPM Nation every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are heard on Podomatic. Of course, this show was aired twice a week, Mondays at 7:30 p.m. and then on Fridays at 7 p.m. and Podomatic, and also on YouTube. With that, I want to thank you for listening. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Sherliff. And until next week, may God richly bless you.